Before we spin on to the next section, I thought I'd bring up this. This is an example of an application that's half done programmatically, half done in Glade. You can see I've done sections here. Oops, this doesn't actually look big enough on this screen. I've done sections that are laid out in Glade, and I've left empty spaces, which I go through my program, and I add all the extra bits and pieces into, giving the end result of something that looks a whole lot. Looks a whole lot like. Wait, my computer to swap.
Nice. Oh.
That's apparently not going to run because whatever.
You need to be there?
Perhaps I do. I don't have it installed, that's why. Now watch my laptop swap some more. I'm running out of memory. So you can fill in your whole application to look like that. Okay. Let's move on, because we're running a bit behind. GUI programming in most toolkits you'll ever come across is event-driven. This is true for GTK, this is true for Qt, this was true for Motif, Athena. It was true, well, it is true for VB.
So I'll talk for a minute. The thing that makes, once you've gotten a hold of this concept, you sort of take it as second nature, but anybody who's not done graphical user interface programming, this is a bit of a shock, which is that you don't write your code procedurally one thing to the next to the next to the next. You set things up, and then you start what's called the main loop, and then you walk away, which is weird.
So you saw before in our example, we had that GTK main, we're starting the main loop. So events come from user input, they come from the X server, they come from timers, and these events trigger callbacks, or call them signals, usually, in GTK language. And any signals you're interested in, you can hook a signal handler up to, calls a function call, and does what you want. So it's pretty straightforward. Like I said, callbacks are issued from the main loop. That's not strictly true. Events are issued from the main loop. Other callbacks are issued when the issuer issues them, which means you can actually get return types. Some callbacks do have a return code to decide what to do after that back in the issuer. But they're issued one at a time, they're issued synchronously, and by default in GTK, it's single-threaded. So if your callback blocks the main loop, if it can't return back to the main loop, your program will appear to have frozen. The user will try to interact with the UI, and nothing will happen. You can then thread your program, or you can re-execute the main loop inside your callback, but you've got to make sure that you understand what's going on, and you can't block the main loop, otherwise your user's going to go, "Ah, your program's crap. I started the calculation and now I can't cancel it, I can't do anything." Because if you're in that calculation loop and you block the main loop, you never receive the event to the cancel button until your calculation finishes. They can click it as often as they want and nothing will happen.
Hold on. So what this graph is showing is the flow chart of an application. You do that, initialize GTK, which was that very first call, GTK init, then you build up your user interface, which is you write the code to pack things together, or maybe use Glade, or whatever. You build your thing up, and the last thing you do, and you saw on the bottom of the C code that David wrote, you start GTK main. And that's what I mean about letting control go. At that point, that call blocks, as far as your code is concerned, and you lose the execution pointer until something happens to cause you to get a callback back into your program. And one of the interesting things about this, and the reason we drew it the way we did, is that there can be several different callbacks for the same signal. You can hook one up, you can hook two up, there might be a default one. The classic example is keystrokes. Every keystroke generates a whole bunch of events, and the default handlers do things like put those keystrokes as characters into your entry or label or whatever. But if you needed to intercept that and do something different with that, perhaps changing the color or something, you could do that by hooking up to that signal.
Okay. So we briefly covered signals are connected to G-objects. G-objects are, well, all GTK widgets are G-objects. It's the fundamental base class that GTK uses to implement object orientation. GObject, if you're in another language like Python or Java, inherits from the base object there. So a GObject is an object that has signals and properties and things. So a widget is an object. When you connect them, you connect four things. You connect it to the object you're interested in, receiving the signal from. You give it the name of the signal you want, so say destroy event or delete event or clicked or activate, or they're all there in the documentation. You give it the function that you want to call when that event happens, so say handle delete callback or something, or on delete exit or some function, and you can give it some optional freeform user data. This could be a pointer. Well, in C it is only a pointer. In other languages that have proper anonymous like type construction that you can pass almost anything you want. Then in your callback, you'll get your callback. The prototype for the callback is of a format defined by the documentation. So say for the clicked function, we'll get to the prototype in a second. And some of the callbacks return information back to the issuer. That might be a Boolean. In the case of a lot of events, that issue a Boolean, so it can say whether to jam the event or whether to keep passing it on to other interested parties. Or it might be some other return type that the signal issuer wanted data about from the callback.
Most of them are void, though.
Most of them are void. So if we go on. Yep. So here's an example of connecting a signal to an arbitrary object. It's the notify signal, which all objects implement this. If one of their properties change, they'll issue the notify signal. So you see the G signal connects, then the object, then the signal name, then the function you want to call back when that signal issues. And in this case, for our freeform data, we're passing null. We don't want any freeform data. And then our actual function will have, for the notify signal, has this prototype. We got that prototype out of the documentation. So you can see we've written notify parent callback, which returns void. We've given the object, so that was the object the signal was issued on. Then we give the arguments that the signal sends us. So in this case, it's sending us a gparam spec. That's not really important what it is. And then finally, it's giving us that freeform user data, which because we don't really care what the type is here, so it's just a G pointer. You can just give the type if you know what the type is going to be.
So David said you can get this out of the documentation. Obviously, that's pretty voodoo stuff there. And so where he got that from is in this dev help program, which is a package you should be able to install. If he pulls up, if he types in G object on the side, I should just pop the top of the page. So this is the page. Every object in GTK and everything else that derives from GObject or uses GObject can have a documentation page that looks like this, and it tells you what header file is involved here. And this is a base class. There's all sorts of gunk and machinery here. But in general, if you look across the top, you'll see that there's a synopsis of all the functions and constants and such, and then followed by a description, which is a nice textual description of what it is, and then the object hierarchy, which isn't very interesting here, but we'll switch to the GTK button in a moment, and it's really cool. And then it lists the signals that it implements. And if he was to click on notify there, it's just a web page, jumps to the notify signal. You can see just underneath the red there. And there is, over in the middle, GObject, GParam spec pointer, and GPointer user data. The variable names don't matter, but the types do. And so that's basically what he iterated verbatim into the callback that he's going to implement. It's all function pointers. I got to admit that I didn't even know what a function pointer was until about 2 years ago, and I think the concept's really cool and also quite insane.
All right, so let's actually do an example of that. What we'll do is we'll take our example with our button in the window, because we've already written it. Go to GTK button. Go to signals.
I'll pull up the hierarchy.
Okay, we'll pull up the hierarchy just because it is really cool. There's the hierarchy for GTK button. You can see what it inherits from, like all of its parent classes and then all of its child classes. That's available for every widget. It allows you to work out what functions you can call or what methods, if we're going to use real object terminology, it would be a method.
And just while we're on a side, one more thing is that, we've been going on about how great this dev help thing is. You can also get this online at a website called library.gnome.org, which David has up here presently. And if you dig into that /devel and then /GTK, I think.
References and images.
Always a bit weird. Just URL it.
So you can see somewhere down here, they go GTK reference manual. This is also available in multiple languages. If English isn't your language, then you can have it in a number of exciting different things. So if you don't have dev help, you can't install it. Just bookmark this page.
So down here is GTK button. If you click on that, there's a page that looks suspiciously similar to the one you just saw in the program that's running locally. Surprise. And if you click on, there's the hierarchy, right? So this is online. It's obviously convenient to have it locally on your laptop or workstation. But if you're just checking something, or actually it's often very useful when you're discussing things on IRC or by email, when you're asking a question and you're either asking a question about a method or function or giving an answer about one, people in the GNOME community quite often will paste a link to library.gnome.org as being, and this is the function you use.
All right.
So it's just kind of cool.
So let's connect the click signal to our button. That seems reasonably common to do. So let's do that. Gsignal connect. Oops. We'll pass button. We want to connect click signal. So this is just the same as before. Now, this is just a cast wrapper to makes the C compiler not complain about callbacks not matching the correct prototype or whatever. You don't really need to worry about it unless you're really interested in how compilers do things. So we'll call it click to callback, and we'll pass no data. And then up here, if we go, we'll have a look. That's void function name, then a button and a pointer. So we'll go static void click callback. Oops. Takes a GTK button. Sweet. And now we can compile that. Run it. And it works. We could then, if we wanted to pass some data into that callback, we can do that. Not too much hassle. So we'll pass in a static string. And commonly what you pass there, rather than a string, often you pass off a structure. Or an object or some other piece of information. But it's just a pointer, so if you want, you can pass an integer or something else. You're only limited in this case, by the C API. Okay. Some signals, as we covered briefly, already have handlers registered, like key press events already have handlers registered to take those key presses and shove them in your text entry. Or in the case of, say, expose event, which is the event you get when you need to draw your widget, every widget implements the expose event handler because that's when it actually does its painting onto the screen. So what you can do with some of these events, like button press or key press or expose, is you can actually connect your own handlers that happen before the default ones, or after if that's your thing, and carry out some operation that might be checking if your button press was in a certain area, or checking if your key press was a certain key, or fiddling with stuff inside the expose handler. But you can carry out some arbitrary code and then return from that to say whether you want GTK to keep passing that event to other interested parties. What will happen, say, is you push a key on top of a text entry, the text entry will be sent the event, and it will either decide to accept it or reject it. If it accepts it, it will tell GTK not to pass that on, so it won't go to the window. But it could just as easily reject that event and pass that event back up to the window, or pass it back up to some intermediate object between those two. So you can choose whether or not to stop them or start them, or sorry, just stop them by returning true or false. Okay, so let's actually now do this in Java, which means we have to change monitors.
For the simple expediency that I know my keyboard and he knows his. All right, the purpose of this talk isn't to demonstrate Eclipse. If you know Eclipse and are a Java programmer, you already know how awesome it is. And if you're a C programmer and you have religious issues with Java, close your eyes. But if you're open-minded, watch the code magically appearing on the screen and drool. So they mentioned in the introduction, I've been working for the last, for a while now, and I'm a Java guy. I was a C programmer as a kid, but when I came back to wanting to do application development, I've been running operations for a large internet company in Manhattan, which was a massive custom Java platform. I did Java programming in the late 90s. And so I was a Java guy. I got, you know, bookshelves full of Java books, and that's the language I was comfortable in, but I wanted to write Linux programs. And it turns out there's a library called Java GNOME out there, and it was bindings to GTK and other things that allowed me to do such programming from Java, which is great. The only problem was, so I got into it, and I actually wrote about 100,000 lines of applications that were like almost ready to see the light of day in terms of being mature, and not just in-house apps. But what happened was, and I normally tell this story with lots of backing slides, but I'll just do the short version, was that you know, I also got involved in the project and got commit access, and not 48 hours after I got CVS, as it then was, commit access to the GNOME repository to commit patches to Java GNOME, the previous maintainer and longtime author vanished. Gone. Incommunicando. And so, you know, at this point I have a vested interest in this library, and I pretty much found myself, you sort of saw it coming, but I'm now the maintainer. Great. Problem was, I didn't write it. I was just trying to use it. And as I started to wade into it, I'm like, oh my god, it's a mess in here. And so, you know, this isn't the case of not invented here. It's a case of, if I'm going to be the maintainer of this, then it really needs to be cleaned up. And incidentally, you know, we always talk about when we rewrite it, right? When we do 2.0. Well, that's a lot of work. And what I've been doing for the bulk of the last 2 years is that rewrite, taking advantage of the fact that that library had 9 years of history, but also 9 years of cruft. And trying to, you know, do a new architecture that would perform, would have excellent performance, that we could do code generation for the middle of it, et cetera, et cetera. That's not really relevant to this talk. What is relevant is that we've now got a library that, among other things, maximizes characteristics so that it works in an IDE, so it takes advantage of namespacing and code completion and features like that, which is why code will be magically appearing on the screen in a minute. But the real point of this, relevant to our tutorial this morning, is that I'm about to do some GTK programming. I'm going to do it in Java, but it's the same concepts. So, David started with, I don't know if this is going to work with this order. Can you guys still hear me? Yeah, well, I was going to try to scare you. That's right. Change my voice.
How's that? Look at that.
Yeah.
No. Oh, the lapel mic is that you need a jacket that has lapels.
It just doesn't work when, if you know, even if you're like really important, it doesn't work if you're wearing a cool black t-shirt. No, you need to have a lapel. All right. So David started with a main function that initialized GTK. So, well, guess what? We do exactly the same thing here. And it's going to complain to me that it doesn't know what GTK is. Can I look up? There we are. Oh, input. Thank you very much. Doesn't know what that is, or it's complaining that it's missing a signature. Well, it takes args just like the C one did. Done. Okay. And at the other end, we're gonna create a window. Now, most people in Java do this. They say window w equals new, you know, whatever. Right? That's pretty common Java code. Personally, I don't do this because the next thing you do is why is it still bitching? Well, we'll ask. We'll put a cursor here. And am I swapping hell or what's going on? Wake up. Or is this just, ooh, nice. Oh, yeah, awesome. Bye now.
This is how you know it's a live demo.
Yeah. No auto-typing. All right, come on. Sweet. Pull up tutorials. Thank you. Now, what's your bitch? Oh, you're complaining you're missing args. That's bad. And the so I said we'd have a window, and this is pretty common Java code, right? The thing is that you often then do w dot and then some methods, right? And I find it incongruous that the variable name and then the method calls are not aligned with the declaration of it. So started out being a C programmer, so I think it's just much better to stick up here and go final window W. Also gets the final out of the way. And now it's going to complain that that's not imported, and we need GTK window, so there it is, thank you. What are you concerned about? I'm going to hover over this, and it's saying, that's really weird. Yeah, save, you're right. Thank you. Somebody gets a hero biscuit. So I've got a window, and we said we needed a button, so I'm going to go and declare myself. Like I said, this I'm a bit of an oddball in doing things this way, but I just think it makes my life better. So final button B, and I'll say that I've got a button equals, I'm just going to complain about imports, we'll get that in a second, equals new button. Don't switch between Python and Java, you keep forgetting to use the new keyword, it's brutal. So import that, thank you, and we'll put hello everyone in there. There's our text for the button. And like just like David did, we're going to pack the add the child button done, and we need to show all the thank you, and we're going to need to run GTK main. Okay. Ta-da, one program. So I can run this. I haven't run it yet, so run as Java application. You could, of course, run this off the command line, yada yada, but Eclipse will help with it. And here we go. Hello, everyone. Right? So this is the same code that David wrote. It's just in a different language. Right? The same concepts. The same packing concepts apply. The same widget hierarchy applies. Something I inherited from my predecessors was that they don't call it GTA button in Java. They just call it button. The Python guys do essentially the same thing. The Mono guys do the same thing. It's just different languages use different, slightly different namespaces. Of course, nothing's happening when I apply.
I can say one thing that you would notice here, if you bring the code back up.
Yep.
You want to scroll down a little?
Yeah, sure.
Because now we're no longer in C, you can see we're now using a more object-oriented approach to the way we call our methods. So instead of saying GTK window add W, B, we're just going W.add B. For
right.
People who've come from an object-oriented background, this is more familiar. This is fundamentally the way that that GTK was designed to work. The only reason it works the other way in C is because C doesn't quite have the capabilities of a real object-oriented language. If you wrote in, say, C++, rather, you would find that the capabilities were there. You could go W, arrow, add, and then pass your widget. So perhaps if you are addicted to your object orientation, then C++ is the language for you rather than C. We only present C because it's a good example for everyone.
And it's obscure, right? The hardest thing about getting going into GTK is just understanding these little basics about casting and such. And anyway, so that's the equivalent call that Dave did, and this is what I did in Java, which is kind of cool. Just to be complete, we'll hook up a signal. So button connect, and I want a new button dot clicked. Thank you. And there we are. And it's complaining. What's it complaining about? Well, if I ask it, go ask what's wrong. Add unimplemented methods. Great. Bam. There's the signature. So none of this futzing about in DevHelp. And we can go. Exactly. Of course, I then have to write the following out, which is the ugliest thing in programming history. I was clicked, right? Oops. So save that and run it. And hello, everyone. If I click, there we go. I was clicked. So now we're caught up. Okay. The point is, the thing I want to show you though is that Eclipse anyway is showing that there's a little red button down here, and it's because the application is running, and it's an application called Tutorials, a Java application. That's a JVM that's running it. Fine. If I kill this off, right, exit, it's still running. That might be more obvious if I ran it off the command line. You would see it hadn't dropped back to the shell yet, and that's because clicking the X button is what's called creating it. It creates an event called the delete event. It's a signal, but we didn't do anything with it, right? And while when you've just got one window, you might think, oh, well, Xing my window is, of course, the application should terminate. Well, actually, think about if you've got lots of windows, right? Just because you close one window doesn't mean the whole thing should fall over, right? And that's because, so that's why you have to deal with that event as just another GUI event. So I'll terminate this right here. You know, it says terminated. Okay, fine. So well, how do we deal with that? We add its signal on widget, but you always do it to windows. So I'll take my window and I'll connect. Oops, connect. Hey, where'd it go? Let's delete. Come on. Connect. There it is. Thank you. I mean, I could have just typed it, but new. It's window dot delete event. And for us, and there we are. And add implement methods. Bam! Thank you. And GTK dot main quit, which in C is GTK underbar main, underbar quit. Right? So if I run this now, I will, what was I complaining about? Who knows? Here we are. It's running. Single hand still works. If I click on X, hopefully, yes, the application terminated. Right? Now, I'll answer your question in a second. This is one of those ones, I'll just maximize here, we don't get any navigation support. This is one of those ones that returns Boolean, right? It turns out that these things that are events coming out of, predominantly things that are coming, events coming from X that GTK then has to respond to, that gives you, the programmer, an opportunity to respond to, take a Boolean. And it's, I never get the straight of this, and I always have to look it up. But returning false means, no, I haven't dealt with this event, pass it on to the next handler. So in the case of a key press, the default handler is probably the one that draws the character in the entry box or something. On the other hand, if you want to block an application from terminating or block something from hiding, then I could have done, I could do something like window.hide, and I could return true. And what will happen is, if I run it, here we are running, and actually on purpose now this time, I've hidden the window, because that's what I told it to do. Actually, that's probably pretty stupid of me. But if I, in this case, so it went away. It went away before, just the application didn't terminate. Well, if I don't hide it, so take that out, save it, run it. Yep, so it's working. If I, now, it's blocking the delete event. Delete event is happening. It's being intercepted. But this handler is returning true, saying, nope, stop emission of this signal. I've taken care of it. And that means that GTK won't carry on with whatever it was supposed to do, which the default handler for Windows, delete event is to hide the window.
Actually,
destroy. Thank you. Destroy the window, actually. Oh, that's actually a useful point. So the default handler for delete event is to destroy the window. If you just want to, if you've gone all the effort of drawing it and creating it, sometimes it's useful to hide it, keeping around a reference to it, so that later on you can show it, bring it back again. And that's something that people often do in this handler.
The other thing that we hadn't pointed out in great detail is that every widget, when it's created, its default state is to be hidden. If you actually want to get your widget on the screen, you need to at some point ask it to be shown. So you can see in the bottom of, here on Andrew's code, there's just show all. Show all is a convenience function which will take a widget and every one of its children and call show on it. Alternatively, individually, you can call show on widgets by themselves. If you create a widget and pack it in your UI at a later date to all the rest of your widgets that you've got to call show all on, you'll still need to call show because that widget's default creation state was still hidden, even though everything else in the hierarchy is being shown. So that's something that you need to always take care of. Someone had a question. Yes.
The way we implemented events or signal prototypes is that they're interfaces, and so you can either create an anonymous instance of that interface right there on the spot, or you can do something really sneaky, which is self-delegation. The class that you're implementing, or any other class for that matter, can implement that interface, and then you can just have the on-click signature. But either way, it's an unimplemented. It creates a method that needs to be implemented to satisfy the terms of that interface, which is how interfaces work, and it's just the way it goes.
So, yes, that is a Java.
It's a Javaism.
Yes. GTK looks then like a native GTK application.
Yes.
It doesn't use Pixmap themes. It'll theme with your desktop. It's properly translatable. Swing has other advantages, so obviously you're going to choose the tool that's best suited for you.
I'm a free software hacker. I care about one platform, Linux. There's lots of different versions of it. As a matter of policy, no one is paying me to do this, so I don't give up. Beep, 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 about beep from Windows. Yeah.
It could work, but Java, no, I don't think yet works on Windows.
There's nothing preventing somebody from porting it, but there is actually a technical issue that people would run into, because I've actually created something that's transparently thread safe. Which means that you can really maximize Java's threading capabilities and still use GTK. It's a bit trickier when you're working in C or C++, actually a lot trickier. Doable, but just you have to do an extra overhead. It turns out that mechanism doesn't work on Win32. Something to do with them having tied threads to Windows
because I gather on Windows that the displayed window on the screen is a really first-class, highly tied operating system entity, and that their threading model is pretty intimately connected
to
that.
Okay, let's not get too deep into it.
That's way off topic, though.
I
had a reason.
Okay. Other languages, C, Python, C++, all work natively on Windows. We've actually got to push on, because otherwise we're going to run out of time. So we'll go and do this now in Python, and other questions, please come up afterwards.
You want to switch the lapel mic? Yeah, I want to switch mics. That's what I was trying to do. Sorry.
All right. So we'll quickly do this in Python, because we had a couple of other examples. Oh, shit. We wanted to show. So I've actually already written the Python example, so if you're having to watch me write it. This Python example, how many people here are familiar with Python? Oh, good. Okay, don't mock my Python. I learned it after I learned to write a lot of other languages. So you can see here I've created myself just a generic class, doesn't do anything. Somewhere in here, F8, I have an initializer for my class. So I've loaded myself up a blade file. You can see I'm at the top. I went import GTK. Fair enough. I've got my blade file, which is just, you know, GTK blade XML constructs it for me. I've retrieved my window. You can see because XML is now an object, I can now call xml.getWidget to get my window. I can then call myself some functions. I can connect my signals. It'll introspect the object I pass it to find the signal function, so in this case self, and finally I've shown it. So fundamentally it's the same code as that second C example. The difference is I've added the signal auto connection, which is a feature of Glade. And then I've called myself, we'll get to this setup tree view in a second. I'll close that one. I'll open tab. So we'll run that. Excellent. So here is a PyGTK application. This one actually works. We can now go to this file chooser. This is called a GTK file chooser button. Select some CSV. And then using Python's built-in CSV module, we can put that into the display. So,
which is pretty slick for a couple of screenfuls of code.
Yeah, this in total is 105 lines of code, and I write reasonably spacey code. So what we've got here, tree views are probably the most complicated widget you'll ever have to interact with on the desktop. They're a model view controller paradigm. You've got a model which is storing your data, and a view which is the actual tree view. Then you've got these things called GTK cell renderers, which actually take data from the model and draw it on the screen. So you can actually pack more into your model than's on the screen, and you can use the same model to power multiple tree views. So you can see here, created a model. We'll go through this very quickly. Created a model, it's got some data types. You can actually now just use Python class names, so you can just say str, str. I don't know if Python has a Boolean class name, but you want it? Okay. you can, I've already grabbed my tree view out of the Glade, I can set the model, and then I can create these renderers to be interested in columns. So I can say the text for this first renderer comes from a column that I've named mainwindow.name. And that's all pretty nice. I could have an extra column in there, which was the perhaps a column. I could store a Python object in a row. I could store some other piece of hidden data. And that way, when I request the row, I can get any information I want. And then when I load the file, you can see here, I've just got my loading out of my CSV file. And I can just call model.append and the thing. In C, this becomes two lines. You become one line to append the data and get what's called an iterator, and a second line to set the values for that row from the iterator. You think so?
Well, I was just going to say, TreeView is nasty. It's a really, really ugly API to use because it's so powerful. It is, however, something you end up needing for almost every application to select from a list, whether it's or display simple tabular information. Some of the things that are interesting about it, though, is, for example, you can have one model of data and different views pulling from that data. So after you've gone to the trouble of building a tree model and populating it, you can have one tree view which presents some bits of it, another tree view that presents other bits of it, some that are sorted, some that are filtered according to whatever criteria. So you do get that information reduced that way. In In languages like C, people tend to use GTK TreeModel as the place they store their data, which is cool. In Python, sort of the middle ground here, you can do either. In the Java world, you've already got a really rich language to express data and do model data. It's called Java. And you've probably already got a rich object model, and you're just trying to present some of that on the screen. It's just your UI on top of a very large, otherwise enterprise application. And so in our context, we tend to just stash the strings or whatever representations of the bits of information into the models as you would set. Pass a bit of a string to be a bit of text to be the label on a label. Well, that's how we stash data into a tree model, so it's then projected into a tree view. But both approaches are quite valid, and if you'll find that there's a lot of flexibility. There's also, but here's the saving grace, there's tons of examples out there, so some really good tutorials. And so just do yourself a day or two to learn it when the first time you come across it, and it'll start to make sense in time.
You'll find it's not that bad once you've written it out. It's a little bit harder in C, but in Python it's pretty gorgeous. Tree views are iterable. So the models rather are iterable, so you can just rip through them. but you can also write your own model if that's a thing. If you've got yourself a storage mechanism, say SQLite, there's already an SQLite tree model out there. So you can take columns out of an SQLite and they appear as a GTK tree model that you can put columns on the screen, apply filters, blah, 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 blah. Just pop back one. That one?
One final notice, and actually we'll just dwell on the slide for a moment. I draw your attention to the class names that we put in blue. We've been doing jargon bingo here for the last couple minutes. I'm just going to slow down for a second. For those of you that aren't Model View Controller experts, Model View Controller, also known as MVC by its initials, is the idea where you've got one thing doing the presentation and another thing storing the data and a third thing acting on it. The TreeView API implements full MVC. The class names that are relevant when you're starting to explore the API, the word tree comes up so much that it sort of numbs the brain. But GTK tree model is the interface. There's two ones that come by default. List store is a tabular column. Whether it's got one column or a table, and whether it's got one column or many, list store is good for that. It's internally just a linked list, surprise. Tree store is... you've all seen threaded mail readers that have, a little triangle that you can expand and track, and that's done by a tree view. And the little triangle and the hierarchy of items in the list are additional APIs that are provided by the tree store class, and both of them are tree models, and most of the functions say, set models. If they take a tree model, you can use either the two major ones that come with GTK. And then there's some specialized ones. Nautilus has a very specialized tree model, which is the one that's the icons, right? And it stores the information, translates files into the icons, which show up in a sort of grid representation, and that's powered by essentially the same logic, although obviously they've got lots of customization.
We've only got a couple of minutes.
Spin on.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go through this very quickly. We're really sorry, we always run out of time with this. There's obviously a lot more than just what we've shown you. These are a bunch of the support libraries that make up GNOME. Gconf, the VFS layer, Caro, which is the anti-aliased graphics layer that everyone talks about, canvassing, DBus. So what's that? That's two slides on. So we've got very quickly, gconf is a configuration system, which most of you, if you're writing a GNOME app, will have to interact with. Gconf is only used for user preferences and settings. It's not used for storing your application state. It's not used for IPC. I've seen someone use it for IPC and just don't do it. You'll blow something up. It's not that, the mechanism is designed for storing data atomically. It's not designed for efficient high bandwidth communication. And you shouldn't use it for your general purpose data storage for your app. Use a database. You also can never assume it's actually writable. Some people have read-only gconf, say you're in an internet kiosk. So that's why you can never store your application state in it. It's stored as keys. People familiar with gconf? I'll skip this very quickly. You can get set keys. You can connect a signal to notify when you change.
So the thing is that the keys come in a hierarchy, and it has some of the same characteristics as the Windows registry, but it's not the same thing. It's if anything, it's simpler and more refined in purpose. You can browse through the whole thing, which is why people start to equate it to the registry, but it's pretty constrained. Nevertheless, keys are in a hierarchy. And as David was just showing, there's a directory part and then a key name, and then obviously it has a value, and there's also a very rudimentary type system there.
Okay, so here's a very quick example. This one's also written in Python. So you can see we're doing a lot of the same as before. We're creating a class called a gconf example. We're initializing Glade XML. We're getting ourselves a connection to the gconf daemon. We're then getting some widgets out. We're then registering notice. So we're registering our interest in a key, particularly the key that implements the desktop background. So you have to add the directory. To say you're interested in keys in that directory, that's just an optimization. You say, I want this key. In this case, you trigger self.newBackground, which is up here, which then will work like that. That's what I've kind of as my desktop background.
Why don't you minimize some of the rest of that?
And if I make that on top, and I go here, I run my magic change background program. Now, there's my new desktop background.
Okay, minimize all the stuff that's covering the background.
Look at that. So it's very easy to track gconf. This allows you to do things like instant apply preferences that work throughout GNOME. You can track system preference changes. You can track multiple instances of your application. If one changes the preference, the other can notice. Start doing really tricky stuff like that. Administrators fiddling the preferences underneath you.
And I mean, this might seem like a simpler, obvious point, but this is a not insignificant part of the integration that happens in GNOME. Things like browser proxies and stuff are set in the system part of the gconf hierarchy tree. Most applications, if you're writing an application, you put your preferences in /app/your application name/, and then you can have your own little hierarchy. Browse around and using gconf-editor if you want to look and see examples.
Okay, we'll very quickly go through this. There is the thing, you talk about the human interface guidelines for laying out your dialogues. People asked before about spacing and design of dialogues. The human interface guidelines give you a lot of hints about how to do that. There's always a couple of important things to consider. The button ordering dialogues really does matter. I don't know if people have noticed, but the button ordering in GNOME and KDE are actually backwards. GNOME uses the same button order as Mac OS X, which comes from a thing called Fitts' Laws of UI design. So the default action is now in the bottom right corner of the screen, or the bottom left corner if you're on a right-to-left language. But some important design considerations. The button ordering matters. If you get the wrong button ordering, people are going to get very confused with your app.
Because you may not even realize it, but you are very used to, if you're using GNOME, you're very used to going to the bottom edge corner of a dialog box and whacking it as OK, or save, or load, or whatever. That's where the execution of the go-ahead path is. Cancel is one off of that, at least. And if you get that backwards, you will mess people up, because these are the habits that create usability, and it's things you don't notice until something violates those contracts that we try to establish. And this is what makes GNOME a desktop. Right? It's all these applications that are trying to follow essentially the same set of usability rules so that you create a consistent user interface, and so things just work.
Okay, so a couple other things. You stock items whenever you can. People are used to the stock delete, stock add. Plus, that way they theme automatically. Don't fiddle with colors and fonts and sizes too much. Use like the standard, like sans serif monospace in the user's default font, which you can get from the preference system. Above all, be consistent with other applications. People are used to using the applications already on their desktop. So when you're writing a new one, if you think the way how should interaction work, rip theirs off. Unless theirs is actually really bad. Now remember that human interface guidelines are just guidelines, so if you disagree with them, do that. And very quickly go through a translation example someone asked. So before, when we did our things, we did something like this. We went gprint hello world. Translation in GTK is pretty simple. You wrap inside the underscore brackets string, which means it will be extracted by Intel tool into one of these. This is a translation file, so this is an example of the French translation file. And every string that's wrapped in that underscore brackets, and every string that's marked as translatable in Glade, and any other strings that you've indicated require translation, will be pulled into this file. And when the translators come around to do your translation, they check out this one file from Revision Control or from Rosetta or from whatever other system people are using, translate all the strings, check that one file back in. The next person compiles it, gets all those translations. So translation is pretty straightforward. There is some build infrastructure required to make it work, which we're not going to show an example of because it depends on the language and it's a little bit involving, but you can just cut and paste it from somewhere else. It's all powered by the new getText. So it's the same as a lot of other systems. And if you get stuck with translation in your apps, If you jump onto the translation team mailing list and say, hi, I need to know about translating my app, they're really helpful because they love being able to get an app sorted out to start with rather than have to go back and fix it at a later date. And just to wrap up, in case you have no idea what we've been talking about, but you really, really want to actually do this, and we haven't driven you off it just yet, here's a list of resources. The online GTK tutorial is pretty good in both C and Python. Is there a Java port of that yet?
Getting close.
Getting close. And in C, there are also now two books that exist. There is the official GNOME 2 Developer's Guide, which is 2.5 years old now, which is okay, but perhaps introduces things in the wrong order. And there's a new one that came out last year by Andrew Krauss called Foundation GTK Development, published by APRIS, which is also not bad. It kind of depends, I guess, on the type of learner you are. A lot of people have found the tutorial is more than enough rather than going and buying a $30 or $40 book, but they're there. The same Java, there's the API documentation and Python. And of course, DevHelp is always a good tool. Once you start to learn your way around, you find DevHelp's really good. But the tutorial,
and most of all, though, I mean, and really this is the thing about open source, right, is that all that code is out there. Every application that's in GNOME and every GTK application out there is an example that you can follow. So if you see something in a program that you want to replicate, it might take a bit of digging, but that's where you can learn from. That's how we all learn.
Google Code Search. It's really good. Okay, that's it. Thank you.